Welcome back to my Love Letter Time Machine. Hi, I'm Ingrid Birchall-Hughes, and I'm serialising the love letters of my great-great-grandparents, Fred Shepherd and Janie Warburton. Travel 140 years back in time with me now, where we take a look at Victorian history through their eyes. And today, Fred's fears about his accommodation problems are realised. Janie is suddenly flavour of the month again with Polly Rowe, and we also have a little look at the Phoenix Park murders. Got a podcast of contrasts for you this time, where a bit of current affairs, current as in 1882, bleeds into everyday life, and then we get to hear one of Fred's gorgeous pieces of description in what can only be described as a hymn to the coastal town of Saltburn. But first, a recap. You might recall that Janie's soon-to-be sister-in-law, Polly Rowe, has been rather passive-aggressive in her behaviour towards Janie, and from his next letter, it appears that Fred agrees with Janie's perceptions in Miss Rowe's character. We also get confirmation that Fred and his lodgers have been priced out of their current lodgings by their landlady, Mrs. Gordon, and they have placed an advertisement to find new ones. 21 Church Street, Middlesbrough, May the 10th, 1882. My own darling wife, I received your very welcome letter this morning. I am glad to hear that Miss Dalton and Ted have been to see you. I should like to have taken tea with you, love, as well. I suppose he would have been agreeable. 4 shillings was very reasonable for cold chicken. How is Ted off for work now, love? Did they mention their marriage? I do wish I could see the old walks at night, love. It would do me good. And on Sunday, I am sure we should have continued a kiss somehow, without them seeing us. I am sorry to hear that you have acquired another cold, darling. You must take care of yourself, wifey, you know. I shall want you. I am about all right now, love, from Sunday, except that I have got a flourishing gumball, which gives me much pleasure. I think the fruit salts have done me good, as I have not had any headache since I bought them. I shall be very pleased for you to take me out for a walk, my darling, for the good of my health. You shall have an opportunity at Whitsuntide. I am not surprised at the character of Polly Rowe's invitation, love, from what we saw of her. But never mind, darling. You can afford to not be troubled over anything like that, love, and put it down to her lack of proper training, or else to her ignorance and bad feeling. She will, I don't doubt, be a sweet sister-in-law. But I think she will not trouble us much, wifey. I think she was very nasty about going to your house. I think she and your Fred felt the expense of the children very much, love. I should be civil to her, love, I think, for quietness, as you say, but you cannot be otherwise, I know, and I'm sure you would not give her cause to say anything like that. Do I understand, love, that you are quite resigned not to go to Roche Abbey on Whit Monday? If we don't go anywhere, love, it will not be any change for you. Of course, to me, love, anywhere with you would be enjoyable. So, if you are quite satisfied, we will do, as you say, go down to our house on the Monday. I expect I shall have Sunday and Monday at Whitsuntide, love. I am glad to think that you do not think I do you any harm, love, or ill-use you. As to the refraining, darling, perhaps it would be as well not to make any rash promises before the time. I knew you loved me, my wife, but I like so much to hear you say so. I don't expect we shall have any misfortune through kissing. We have not sufficient time to injure ourselves in that way. With regard to the lodgings, I think it is about settled that we are to leave. I'm going to see some fresh lodgings tonight near the park. It is a bigger house, and they ask for 18 shillings for the three of us, whereas if we stay yonder, we shall have to pay 24 shillings for the three, so that for economy's sake, we are almost compelled to leave. I shall let you know on Saturday what we have decided. If you go down to our house tomorrow, love, I would not say anything about receiving this, unless they ask, because I was to send them some more money today, and I forgot about it until after the post office has closed, and my mother might think I've done it purposely if she knows you have received a letter. Write for Friday, love, if you can. It is so pleasant to get a letter every other day. I remain your loving, true and faithful husband, Fred. Handsworth, May the 11th, 1882. My own darling husband, I was pleased to receive your letter this morning. I should have been agreeable for you to take tea with us last Monday. It would have been a treat if you could have done that, love. Ted did not say how he was off for work now, and they did not say anything about their marriage. Ted did not get to tea as he thought, but came up about 7. Miss Dalton and I went through the nurseries just before 6. We got some very nice cut flowers. I went down to Rose on Tuesday after tea, and Polly was quite different. She asked me to be bridesmaid, and to say what dresses would be nicest, and was very amiable indeed. She is a queer customer to deal with. She is so changeable. Lizzie and I are to be the bridesmaids. We are thinking of having 2 very pretty sateen dresses, and Polly a stone-coloured silk. The wedding is to be the fortnight after Whitsuntide, cream-coloured hats and gloves. I wish you could be with us then, love, but I would rather have you at Whitsuntide, even if you could come then. Polly, Carrie, Lizzie and I went down to Mrs. Fleer's last night to see her about making 2 of the dresses, and called Polly's dressmakers to see about making hers. I have found out how I offended Polly. The last time I was there, before Carrie came, I said, as I was leaving her, "You will be coming up soon, Polly," and did not mention any particular day. I found out through our Fred. He knew I was going on Tuesday, so he said, "Don't ask Polly to come sometime." I thought it was a very trivial thing that I had offended in. I thought I would not offend last night in the same way. I asked her to come to tea today, as it is the only day Carrie was open to be at our house, except Saturday and Sunday. I expect them every minute now, so I am rather hurried over your letter. I try to take care of myself, love. I don't know how I have got my cold. It is all in my doze today. I'm quite glad you are all right, darling. I am quite resigned not to go to Roche Abbey on Whit Monday. It will be a very agreeable change to have you with me, love. I shall not get to your house today, as they are coming. Carrie has been staying at Rose since Tuesday. I hope you will be comfortable in your new lodgings if you decide to go. I will write you a longer one for Sunday. I love you, my darling, more than ever, and I shall be so glad to see you. I remain, my darling husband, your loving, true and faithful wife, Janie. Church Street, Middlesbrough, May the 12th, 1882. My own darling wife, I received your welcome letter this morning. I thought you would not disappoint me, darling. You are evidently going to be a big gun in this forthcoming marriage, darling, being bridesmaid and having the great responsibility of choosing the dresses. I am sure they will be nice if they wear what you choose for them. I should very much like to be there at the interesting ceremony, but I don't think I could conveniently get being so near Whitsuntide. It will be a fine experience for you, love, attending so many weddings, while I have never been to one all through. I am afraid I shall want some little instruction from you, but you will assist me, won't you, darling, as you have done at other interesting periods of our mutual existence and pleasure. Why did they not choose it for Whitsuntide, and then one could have seen it? I think it would be equally convenient then, wouldn't it? I wish we were married now, and then I could stop at your house without inconveniencing you in any way. I think Polly was very foolish in taking offence in such a trivial thing as that, love. You'll have to be extremely careful how you treat her, especially when she enters your family, love. I am sorry Carrie is to leave you, love, because you will not have many intimate friends now, because they were almost all of them dropped as I took their places, which of course I am very sorry. I was in hopes that Carrie would stay over Whitsuntide, and then I should see her. Please remember me very kindly to her, and express my sorrow at not being able to renew our pleasant acquaintance. I hope your cold will soon be better, my darling. You must be better for Whitsuntide, love, or else you will be wanting to blow your nose when I want to kiss you, which would be a serious loss to me. Have you taken anything for it, love? Hot coffee sweetened with treacle is a good thing. Also, as much cold water as you can drink, both to be taken before going to bed. Now, my darling, are you quite satisfied with not going to Roche Abbey on Whit Monday? Because you know, love, if you want to go, I shall be only too glad to take you. I should not like to feel you disappointed, wifey, on that day, or you might be scolding me, a thing that I never remember you to have done so far, and which I should not recommend you to try on. With regard to the change of lodgings, love, we have had a meeting in the form, Banks, Alvy and myself, together with Mrs. Gordon, and she seems very determined not to let us stay on at the old rate, but gives us the option of taking the rooms for 24 shillings for the three of us, that is, 8 shillings each, and will not hear of boarding us at all. Now where we have decided to go, we will get 3 rooms for 18 shillings, which is 6 shillings each. I may mention that the rooms are nicer than those we occupy at present, and there is a piano. With regard to the boarding, I don't think it will cost us much more than 10 shillings per week each, perhaps not as much, so that we shall not lose much and save 2 shillings each by changing. Besides, I should not like to stay at Church Street now, because after what has occurred, I don't think we should feel comfortable. I think Mrs. Gordon is doing a very foolish thing, because by her own showing, when there were 6 of us, the board for all 6 cost £2 per week, that is, for the 3 of us, 20 shillings. Now the 3 of us pay 48 shillings, so that in a way she would clear 28 shillings per week. But at the new idea, the 3 of us would pay 24, so that she would be a loser to the extent of 4 shillings per week by the change. Besides that, there is the danger of not letting her rooms, and judging from there being 27 replies to our advertisement, I should say that it would be some time, perhaps months, and that I should think it would be a serious loss to her, having nothing coming in. However, the thing is settled now, and we leave tomorrow week. I shall let you know the proper address before then. I do not know it at present, love. Where we are going is only about 3 minutes' walk from the park, which is looking very nice at present. I hope I have not wearied you with these details of such a trivial matter, but I thought you would like to know, darling. What a sad affair it was about Lord Frederick Cavendish. It was he that unveiled the statue here at the Jubilee, so that Middlesbrough was interested in him to a certain extent. The shops were all closed yesterday afternoon, and the blinds drawn. The statue was also draped in black. But that is a mournful subject. A brighter one is Whitsuntide, only 14 days, love, to our happy meeting. I am almost counting the hours to it now, darling. I remain, my darling wifey, your loving, true, and faithful husband, Fred. P.S. I should have written more, love, but it is 8:25 now, and I have not had tea. You must excuse the variety of paper, darling. I'm always amazed when a bit of recorded history turns up in the letters. The death of Lord Cavendish was a seismic event that became known as the Phoenix Park Murders. He was a Liberal politician who had travelled to Dublin to be sworn in as the new Chief Secretary of Ireland. He disembarked from a steamship at 7 a.m. on the 6th of May 1882, and 12 hours later, he was dead. The city he arrived in was struggling, beset by poverty that was driving mass emigration, creating serious decline. In order to understand the febrile atmosphere surrounding the murder, we have to go back to 1879 with the advent of an intractable impasse between landlords and their tenants who, suffering from crop failures and prolonged exploitation, had begun demanding better rights. The conflict that became known as the Land War only grew over the next years, and at first, the British government was unsympathetic and cracked down on the growing movement with ever-increasing severity. After the 1880 election, the new government realised that they had to be more conciliatory, and to that end, Prime Minister William Gladstone sought out someone to become the new secretary to ease the situation. Cavendish wasn't his first choice. He was a somewhat retiring personality, but he was known and trusted, in part due to being married to Gladstone's niece, Lucy Littleton. Cavendish and the Earl of Spencer, who was to become the Lord Lieutenant for Ireland, arrived in Dublin to a festive atmosphere. The streets were lined with people and they were welcomed at the station by the Lord Mayor. The reception was at first welcoming and celebratory, but as they approached Trinity College, the mood shifted and students from the college started to pelt the procession with flour. And this surely would have given the new arrivals the impression that their welcome was only skin deep. After arriving at Dublin Castle, Spencer was sworn in as the Lord Lieutenant and Viceroy, and Cavendish as the Chief Secretary. At some point during the afternoon, Cavendish was introduced to Thomas Henry Burke, the permanent Under-Secretary at the Irish office. Burke had been de facto in charge for the last few years, and as such had become associated with the conflicts and was a well-known and controversial figure in Ireland. After a long day of official duties, Cavendish elected to walk home to his new residence, the Viceregal Lodge, through Phoenix Park. As he walked, a carriage pulled up alongside, and out stepped Thomas Burke, and the two men elected to continue walking through the park together. Unbeknownst to them, Burke was being followed by seven men. What then followed was a brutal attack focused on Burke. Two of the seven were carrying surgical knives, and both men were repeatedly stabbed, Cavendish trying to defend himself against the assailants with his umbrella. His struggle was in vain, and 12 hours after he had come to Dublin to oversee a policy of conciliation, he became the latest victim of the conflict. The murders caused a shockwave through both Ireland and Great Britain, and the circumstances of Lord Cavendish's death were condemned by all sides. After his body was taken back to England, thousands attended his funeral, including 300 members of Parliament. That this shockwave was felt by Fred and Janie is a startling moment, where something of history isn't just a distant event, but connects and has repercussions down the years. I think of terrible moments we have all lived through where we were knocked sideways by a public tragedy and we all stopped, our heads not able to wrap themselves around what had suddenly become an unwanted reality. I think you can definitely see that this is one of those moments from Fred's letter. By the way, I thought it was important to get my information from an Irish rather than a British source for the background here, and would like to credit Finn Doyer and his Irish History podcast, which gave me, a Brit who shamefully has not been taught very much about this chapter in history, a deeper understanding of the cultural details and provided valuable context. It's an excellent podcast, by the way. Definitely recommend it. And he's produced two episodes on the Phoenix Park murders. Anyway, back to Handsworth with Janie's next letter. Handsworth, May 13th, 1882. My own darling husband, I received your welcome letter this morning. I am evidently going to be a big gun at the wedding. We are going to get the dresses on Wednesday. I am glad you think that will be nice as I am choosing them. I wish you could have been there to see us. I shall not be able to show you the dress even at Whitsuntide, but we shall see them afterwards, and I shall be very happy to give you any instructions to assist you at the wedding, love, as you are inexperienced. They do not like Whit Monday weddings. Besides, it would be very inconvenient for us. We could not leave only Mother and Kate to do everything, being such a busy week. I wish we was married now, so that you could stay comfortable at our house. But it does not inconvenience us at all. I am afraid the inconvenience is on your side. We have to push you in anywhere. I am sorry Carrie can't stop until after Whitsuntide, but it is their busiest time then. She wishes to be kindly remembered to you and would like to have seen you. My cold is better today, love, and I think it will be all right by the time you come, and shall have got over blowing my nose so often. So, darling, we shall not have to have the serious loss of not kissing each other. I am quite satisfied with not going to Roche Abbey, and shall not feel at all disappointed, my husband, if you do not take me. I think Mrs. Gordon is making a mistake in letting you go. I certainly should go if there are nice rooms and cheaper, and you think you will be comfortable. I don't think you would be comfortable to stay in Church Street now. It will be very nice for you to be so near the park. I wish I could have a walk around with you tonight, darling. I am never wearied with anything that comes from you, love. It is always interesting when it is anything that concerns you. It is a sad affair about Lord Cavendish. You would be interested in him to a certain extent at Middlesbrough. It is a shocking thing. Ginny Reckless has come up this afternoon. So, darling, we have so much to talk about the wedding, and they won't wait for me to write more. I will give you a long one for Tuesday or Monday if I can. I remain, my darling husband, your loving, true, and faithful wife, Janie. Twenty-one Church Street, Middlesbrough, May 14, 1882. My own darling wife, I received your letter this morning, and was very much disappointed at it being so short. I hope you are not vexed with me, love, over anything, as I am not aware that I have given you cause to be so. If I have, I regret it, wifey. Why should I not be able to see the dress at Whitsuntide, love? You say you are going to get them on Wednesday. I suppose you mean next Wednesday, don't you? It would certainly be very inconvenient to have the wedding on Whit Monday, love, being such a busy week. It is no inconvenience to me to stay at your house, but it seems a shame to turn your John out of his bed for the sake of poor me. I am pleased to hear that your cold will be better by the time I come, so that we shall not lose any kissing. Will you please tell Ginny Reckless from me, love, that I do not feel very pleased that she should occupy your time talking about such trivial matters as a wedding, instead of letting you write a letter to me, which is my far more important and necessary duty. I think I told you we had decided to leave here and go up near the park. We shall have to board ourselves there, so I don't really know how much it will cost us. But in any case, it will be a saving of 2 shillings on the new rate here, and we should have to board ourselves if we stayed here. I went down to Redcar again yesterday afternoon to look at our secretary's new house. It was a beautiful day, being perfectly cloudless. I got down to the house just after 3 and stayed there until 5, making arrangements with the builder for the connecting of the water and sundry other business. Mr. McCry, the secretary, has left it all in my hands to make the best arrangements I can for him. I hope he will be satisfied with what I have done, for I have done the very best I could under the circumstances. The rent of the house is £35 a year, which I do not think is very heavy, seeing that there are 3 rooms downstairs, 5 bedrooms, and 1 attic. Besides, there is 1/2 acre of land attached to the house. The paper looks very nice now it is put on, and I feel quite gratified at my choice. It is a very good experience, love. After I had finished looking after the house, I set off to walk to Saltburn on the sand. Saltburn is 5 miles from Redcar. It is a magnificent walk. The sands are so firm. And being by myself, I had plenty of time to think. And I thunk so deeply that I did not notice that the tide had come in so much that I was surrounded by water. That being the case, of course, I had to get across it the best way I could. So I pulled my shoes and stockings off and walked through it. You would have smolled if you could have seen me paddling through the water with my shoes in one hand and my stockings in the other and my trousers turned up. Not very dignified, was it, love? I got to Saltburn at 6:15 and, of course, being hungry, had tea first thing to keep up the British constitution. After tea, and took a walk around the town. And of all the lovely places, I think Saltburn is the loveliest. The town is built on top of a cliff, and you get onto the pier down the lift. There is no promenade, and almost all the houses are built towards the hills, and they seem to be almost all gentlemen's houses. From the street, the ground slopes down to a stream, and then up again on the other side. On the slope are the celebrated gardens, which is something like the spa at Scarborough. Further on from these gardens are some woods belonging to the Earl of Zetland, but which are open to the public, and for loveliness, I have seen nothing to equal them, not even Roche Abbey, though it is something like it. The hillsides are quite as steep as that we climbed at Matlock, with a stream at the bottom, spanned by rustic bridges. The trees seem quite as big as those at Roche Abbey, and yesterday looked beautiful. You could imagine you were 100 miles from the sea. The hawthorn was all in bloom, and the bluebells, and the primroses in flower. Oh, darling, if you had been there, it would have been an Eden. But never mind, darling, I should be able to show it to you when we are married. I'm sure you will feel resigned to Middlesbrough Wifey when you have seen Redcar and Saltburn. I was so interested in the scenery that I missed the train and had to walk back to Redcar and then ride home. It was very nice, but I always feel as though I only half enjoyed it with you not being there. Without you, darling, I feel so lonely. But I shall soon see you and get a fresh stock of courage to help me live a little longer. Only 13 days, love, to our blissful meeting, but that includes another Sunday after today. I enclose you a little hawthorn I got from Saltburn. I have not been able to give you any other flowers this year, love, but will give you myself instead. I remain your loving, true, and faithful husband, Fred. Oh gosh, isn't that letter simply beautiful? It's possibly my favourite. Fred really letting his writing and his thoughts soar there. And the fact that he got so distracted not once but twice, getting cut off by the sea and then missing his train, feels so, so familiar. I'm just like this. And it was this particular letter that left me without any doubt that I have inherited Fred's soulfulness and his capacity for getting lost in the moment. It brings him so tantalisingly close. Oh, how I wish I could have met him. We should probably leave it there for now. Next time, Fred moves to his new lodgings, and Janie's friend Carrie has to send sad news to her sister Annie in Australia. Thank you so much for listening to my love letter time machine. I'd very much like to share Fred and Janie's story with more people, so if you haven't already, can I ask you to share this podcast with someone you think might enjoy it? And if you'd like to leave a review in the ratings, that would also be most welcome. You can find excerpts of Fred and Janie's letters on Instagram at @mylovelettertimemachine, all one word. And if you like, you can write to me at mylovelettertimemachine@gmail.com. Until next time, take care.